no verse written on the board, correct? Is that the program here? Nobody knows. I guess that's the program. So I'll recite, and you can listen. Today's a holiday, and therefore there's fewer people here. That's what your point is? Okay. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Reading this morning from Canto 6, Chapter 17, entitled Mother Parvati Curses Chitraketu, and the text number is 29. Dehinam deha samyoga dvandvanishvara lilaya sukham dukham mithir janma shapo nugraha evacha. Again. Dehinam deha samyoga dvandvanishvara lilaya sukham dukham mithir janma shakondo graha evacha. We'll do the word for word. Dehinam, of all those who have accepted material bodies, deha samyoga, because of contact with the material body. Dvandvani, dualities. Ishvara Vilaya, by the supreme will of the Lord. Sukham, happiness. Dukham, distress. Mithi, death. Janma, birth. Shapaha, curse. Anugraha, favor. Eva, certainly. Cha, and. Translation, because of the actions of the Supreme Lord's external energy, the living entities are conditioned in contact with material bodies. The dualities of happiness and distress, birth and death, curses and favors, are natural byproducts of this contact in the material world. Purport by Srila Prabhupada. In the Bhagavad Gita we find Mayadhyakshena Prakriti Suyate Sacharacharam. The material world works under the direction of the goddess, Durga, the material energy of the Lord. But she acts under the direction of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. This is also confirmed in the Brahma Samhita 5.4.4. Shristi Siti Praya Sadala Shakti Rekha Chaye Vayasya Bhuvanali Vibharti Durga. Durga, the goddess Parvati, the wife of Lord Shiva, is extremely powerful. She can create, maintain, and annihilate any number of universes by her sweet will. But she acts under the direction of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Krishna, not independently. Krishna is impartial. But because of this, because this is the material world of duality, such relative terms as happiness and distress, curses and favors, are created by the will of the Supreme. Those who are not Narayana Para, or pure devotees, must be disturbed by this duality of the material world, whereas devotees who are simply attached to the service of the Lord are not at all disturbed by it. For example, Haridas Thakur was beaten with cane in 22 bazaars, but he was never disturbed. Instead, he smilingly tolerated the beating, despite the disturbing dualities of the material world. Devotees are not disturbed at all, because they fix their mind on the lotus feet of the Lord and concentrate on the holy name of the Lord. They do not feel the so-called pains and pleasures caused by the dualities of this material world. So the verse again. Dehinam. No. I'm just going to say it slowly. Dehinam deha samyogad dvandva nishvara lilaya sukham dukham nithir janma shapundu graha evacha. Because of the actions of the Supreme Lord's external energy, the living entities are conditioned in contact with material bodies. The dualities of happiness and distress, birth and death, curses and favors are natural byproducts of this contact in the material world. The scene is King Chitraketu has been cursed by an angry Parvati who made a mistake. She thought that Chitraketu was mocking or making fun or deriding her good husband Lord Shiva, and so she cursed him. And his response was indifferent to the curse, and he accepted the curse and he spoke to Parvati in a very pleasing manner, circumambulated her, offering his respect to her, and departed and accepted the curse. Then Lord Shiva spoke to Parvati saying, "He hasn't offended me, you have offended him, because he is as exalted as I am. Proof is that he is indifferent to duality." Lord Shiva gave three aspects: liberation, attainment of heaven, descending to hell, equally disposed towards each of them, because he's attached to Lord Narayana. He's a pure devotee of the Lord. So exalted is the quality of a pure devotee of the Lord, and he exhibited it, and you have offended him. So now this is Narada speaking. Text 26. In the presence of the great sage Narada, the demons, the inhabitants of Sitaloka, and his personal associate Lord Shiva, who is most powerful, spoke to his wife Parvati while they all listened. So Lord Shiva is explaining to Parvati her error or her offense. So if Parvati can make an error or an offense, we'll just speak of ourselves. So he's explaining in his words the exalted nature of one who is beyond duality, in one sense, what Srimad Bhagavatam is doing. It's a graduate study of Bhagavad Gita. You've heard that. There's the undergraduate, there's the graduate, there's the postgraduate study. So in Bhagavad Gita, a number of places, very particularly strong is in chapter 6 of Bhagavad Gita, where Krishna is describing the process of yoga, and where the yogi is neutral towards duality. They see equally a pebble, the stone, and gold, and equally disposed in chapter 2, one of the very earliest instructions that Krishna gives. Fixed in the spiritual conception, such a person tolerates, just because at one level is to tolerate, another level is you're indifferent. Indifferent is more advanced. Tolerate is, you feel some pulling and pushing, but you tolerate it. Of happiness and distress, pleasure, pain, winter and summer season, honor and dishonor. That goes on in this world of duality. And chapter 2, tolerate. Chapter 6, fix your consciousness upon the personality of Godhead and become indifferent altogether. Like mentioned yesterday evening about Maharaj Ambarish, how he was indifferent to his opulence. He was no more significant than a pebble with all of his opulence that was more exalted, more fabulous than the opulence of heaven. Insignificant. Because he had something that was significant. And that significant was service to Krishna, to the medium. So we're being introduced in the Hare Krishna movement to service to Krishna, which the tendency for which is being awakened, starting with the chanting of the Hare Krishna mantra. And then we grow that mood of service through all the activities that we do. It's like an incubation chamber, or a womb, or a nice fertile garden place where the creeper of bhakti is to grow, continually increasing the growth of that creeper by the hearing and chanting process, like we're doing right now, and just before the worship of the deity and the kirtan before the deity and so on. And all those nice things to enhance this one thing. The increase of our desire, our disposition towards service to Krishna. And in the superlative advanced state by King Chitraketu, that attraction for service to Krishna, the Narayana Para phrase is used in the purport, pure devotion to Krishna, then there's literally indifference to the pronouncement that Prabhu, tomorrow I have some good news for you. Tomorrow you're going to be liberated. And the Narayana Para devotee says, very well. Whoops, I made a mistake. Tomorrow you're going to hell. Oh, so be it. If Krishna's service is available in that realm, very nice. Because I'm attached to service to Krishna. No, it's somewhere in between. It's the heavenly region. So be it. As long as there's service to Krishna. So the message here is attachment to the service of Krishna carries one beyond duality. Attachment to the service of Krishna carries one beyond duality. It's not that duality stops, since here we are in the material world. Sometimes the rain is coming down in torrents, and sometimes the sun is shining. Sometimes it's daytime, sometimes it's nighttime. Sometimes there's honor, and sometimes there's dishonor. Is there anyone that can say they've never experienced dishonor? It's the world of duality, so it's always going to be there. And we become, oh, I'm being dishonored. And oh, I'm becoming honored. Our happiness and distress is in terms of duality. That's, as Prabhupada is writing in the purport, one who is not Narayana Para or pure devotee must be disturbed. Must be disturbed. That's the default position. And then there's the correct position that awakens through devotional service to Krishna, starting with the chanting of the Hare Krishna mantra. That's the meaning. Prabhupada has given us that translation of the Hare Krishna mantra. O energy of Krishna, Hara, and the vocative becomes Hare, just like Radha. When calling her, it becomes Radhe. When you go to Vrindavan, you hear practically everybody, the Vrijvasis. We say Hare Krishna, and they say Radhe, Radhe. That's written all over the place in Hindi. Radhe, Radhe. So it's calling Radha, in the vocal it becomes Radhe. So Hara, another name of the internal potency of Krishna. Radha's another name is Hara. In the vocative it becomes Hare. Oh, energy of the Supreme Lord, please mercifully engage me in the service of Krishna. It's a very, very broad, pervasive prayer that we're being engaged in. And it's a Maha Mantra in the sense that it's especially powerful. Of all mantras, it's especially powerful. As stated in the scriptures and as given to us by Lord Chaitanya, and we chant it aloud. And there's no violation of vague rules. You're not supposed to chant mantras aloud. But we chant it aloud because it's a special kind of mantra. It's a specially meant for Kali Yuga mantra. It's good in any yuga, but it's especially, there's offenses to be avoided, but one can call loudly even what is unqualified and take the mercy of Krishna in the form of being engaged in his devotional service. But, there's always a but, there's another feature of the internal potency of Krishna, Hara, becoming Hare. There's another feature, and that's the feature of Durga. Durga, here in Guyana, there's a few Shakti worshippers. Here and there, right? More than here and there, a whole lot of them. Shakti worshippers. That means the worshippers of Durga. By different names, but different names, just the different aspects of Durga, because she's in charge of the material energy. Well, she is in charge under the authority of Krishna. She's in charge. Like a prison has a prison warden, and then the prison warden is under the authority of the government, and the government has its head of state. So there's a department, the whatever it's called, prison department, the House of Correction sounds like a nice word, prison department. But there's a department head, and then there's the government that the prison department is answerable to, and then there's the head of state. So Krishna is in charge, as the verse is being quoted, Maya Yakshina Prakriti. Prakriti is material energy, that's Durga. Durga, who is she? According to scripture, there's different ways of saying, she's the reflection of the internal potency. She has no existence outside of the internal potency. She is a, in the language of Sri Brahma Samhita, she's a maidservant of Rama Devi is the name of the consort of Mahavishnu, just like in Vaikuntha. Lakshmi is the consort of Narayana, or in Ayodhya, Sita is the consort of Ram. In Goloka, Radha is the consort of Krishna. And in the material world, her name is Rama. She's the internal potency of Mahavishnu. And when Mahavishnu desires, there's detailed descriptions in Bhagavatam of why, in a cyclical manner, when the living entities are within the body of Mahavishnu, he has two desires, compassionate desires. One, the living entities that are within his body in a dormant state of consciousness, compassionately, he desires that they can again experience happiness in direct loving service, enter into his eternal pastimes with him in the spiritual world. He desires compassionately for them to experience that happiness. That's one desire. Then there's a second desire. The second desire is, off in a distance, there's this shadow of, or reflection of, his internal potency. The name of his internal potency again is Rama. And at a distance is the reflection of her. And one of her names is Chaya Devi. Chaya means shadow or reflection. Just like you're driving in your car, for example, and it's night, and you look in your rear view mirror, this one or this one, and you see the headlights of a car behind you. Well, you don't see the headlights of the car behind you. You see the reflection of the headlights of the car behind you. And that tells you there's a car behind you. But you're not seeing their headlights. You have to turn around, and then you can see their headlights. But you're just looking in your mirror, and you see the reflection of. So notice the distinction between the reflection of and the object. We'll give another example. Here's an apple, and here's a mirror. And in the mirror, there's a reflection of the apple. There's no substance in the reflection of the apple. It's just a reflection. You can't offer a reflection to Krishna. You can offer the apple to Krishna. And after its prasadam, you can take the remnants of Krishna's prasad and eat the apple. But you can't eat the reflection. There's no substance. It's just a reflection. And not only that, turn the mirror slightly and the reflection is gone. Now we get the reflection again. Now it's gone. Now you see it, now you don't. There's happiness. Whoops, it just went away. Now there's distress. Whoops, it just went away. There's no substance over here. It's just reflection. So Mahavishnu sees this Chaya Devi, who is a reflection of his internal potency. But she's a person, and she's described in the purports of Sri Brahma Samhita as a maid servant of Rama. Like in the times of royal culture, there's a queen who's the queen of the king, and the queen has maid servants. So the maid servants aren't the queen. There's the queen, and the queen has maid servants. So Chaya Devi, or Durga Devi, is described as a maid servant of one of the co-wives or co-consorts of Mahavishnu. But she's in a different category as one of the co-wives. She's a maidservant. She's the maidservant of Rama. She does what Rama wants. That's what maidservants that are proper do. Those who are there, the native servant of, they do their bidding. So Mahavishnu sees Rama Devi. She's in a dormant state. And he knows she wants some service. But she doesn't have any service during the cosmic annihilation. So out of compassion for Chaya Devi, he desires to give her some service. So there's two compassionate desires. Awakening the living entities to their dormant, eternal loving relationship with the Supreme Lord, and a desire to give Chaya Devi some service. Two desires. Rama, his internal potency, she knows that her husband's desire, Jesus' internal potency. And so she starts to serve him by transforming one of her unlimited potencies, her time energy, to activate, to literally impregnate the Chaya Devi along with the living entities. She entrusts the living entities and her time energy to Shambhu, who's the glance of Mahavishnu, as Mahavishnu is glancing toward Chaya Devi. She, Rama Devi, entrusts those two, Jiva Shakti and Kala Shakti, the time energy and living entities, to Shambhu, and Shambhu, zoom, 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 carries that time energy and the living entities into the field of the material energy. And then the material energy becomes activated. Literally, it's the original impregnation, original act of procreation. And then this undifferentiated material energy starts to differentiate. Elements start to come out that were previously undifferentiated. And very soon we have the Mahatattva. Agitated by the living entities and the time energy of Rama Devi. And then this Chaya Devi takes on another name. Her other name is Durga. One of her many names is Durga. So she's in charge of this place, not just, you know, the earth planet or this universe. She's in charge of the whole shebang, the whole cosmic manifestation. Jeez, as it said, is very powerful. Ooh. She can create, the reference to the Sri Brahma Samhita verse, Srishti, Stiti, Pralaya, Sadana Shaktireka. Those words, Srishti means create. Srishti Shakti, the potency of creation. Stiti means to maintain. And Pralaya, annihilate. Now normally we say, Vishnu is the maintainer. Brahma is the creator. And Lord Shiva is the destroyer. We've all heard this so many times. They do so through her agency. She's out in the field, and they're like in their office. She is a potency of Rama Devi. She is a reflection of her potency. So you can say the same thing in different ways, and they're all correct. It's not this one's right and that, or that one's wrong, or that one's right and this one's wrong. They're all right. It's just a matter of how you describe, the perspective from which you describe the event. But she's very powerful. Through the adhyaksha, maya adhyakshina property, this word adhyaksha, akshini's eyes. Adhyaksha, he oversees, through his superintendence, she does what she does. She creates, she maintains, she annihilates. It's, you know, yes sir, create. Yes sir, maintain. Yes sir, annihilate. Because she's his potency. and she acts only under his direction. He doesn't have to do anything. He just desires. And she does everything. And then there's other agents, Vishnu, Shiva, Brahma. Brahma does the creating, Shiva does the destroying. But they do through the agency of Durga. And she considers, in one sense, she considers herself very fortunate. She has some service to do. But on the other hand, she considers herself unfortunate. And I'll describe how she, way in which she considers herself unfortunate. This is described in Navadvip Dham Mahatmya. This is a book by Bhaktivinoda Thakur. And if those of you who have been to Mayapur, you'll remember what I'm about to say, because it's part of when you go on Parikrama, the Navadvip Parikrama, one of the places that you'll visit is the Jagannath Mandir. On the first day of the Navadvip Parikrama. And in the back area of Navadvip Parikrama, there is a murti of Simantini. Simantini. Because Simantini presides over Simantadvip, one of the nine islands in Navadvip. There's the central, just like here. There's the center, that's where Lord Chaitanya's birthplace is, that's Antardvip. And then count them. There's eight petals around that central one. Yes? So one of them is Simantadvip. When you the first place you go to visit is the birthplace of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. That's the center. And then the next island that you go to is Simantadvip. And presiding over Simantadvip is Simantini. And here's how Simantini, or Simantadvip got its name, according to Navadvip Dham Mahatmya. One fine day, Lord Shiva was calling out very loudly the holy name, Gauranga, 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 repeating, just calling out, Gauranga. And his body was erupting in displays of ecstatic devotion. Gauranga, Gauranga, Gauranga. On and on, and dancing like a madman. And Parvati saw Lord Shiva in this condition and asked him, whoa, who is this Gauranga? I've never heard this name before. Very attractive name, but please describe, my dear husband. And so he described the eternal abode of the personality of Godhead, Krishna, who appears in the mood of his dear beloved devotee Radha, appears in Navadvip Dham, and he spreads all over the world love of God in the highest form of Braja Prem. And this name Gauranga describes him and his form and his mercy. And Parvati said, well, I'd like to go to that place. May I take your permission and go to Navadvip and also call out Gauranga like you are doing? I'll undergo austerities. I'd like to experience and be in the association of Gauranga Mahaprabhu. So he gave his blessing to Parvati, who came to Simantadvip and started calling in ecstatic devotion, Gauranga, Gauranga, like her husband, following his footsteps. And Gauranga appeared. And Parvati was in ecstasy seeing Gauranga, and she fell at his feet and took some dust from his feet and placed it in the part of her hair which is in Sanskrit called Simanta, and thus the name Simantini, where the dust of Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was placed in the part of her hair, and she spoke to him in this way. Gauranga Mahaprabhu, I am so unfortunate that I have this service. I'm fortunate to have service, but I'm so unfortunate to have this service that keeps me so busy dealing with the conditioned souls who are rebellious towards you. That's my association. All the bad, rebellious, caught in duality persons that I have to inflict upon them so much misery due to their misdeeds and their ill attitude towards you, that I never get your association. Please give your mercy to me. And so then, Gauranga, this is the important part. Gauranga Mahaprabhu says to Parvati, my dear Devi, please don't lament. Please understand that you make my pastimes complete. In your original form, as the internal potency of the Personality and Godhead, you facilitate my pastimes in the spiritual world. Yogamaya facilitates the pastimes of Krishna in the spiritual world, or Chaitanya Mahaprabhu in Sweta Dweep, in the spiritual realm. And in this form, you also assist me in my pastime of creation. Please note that in the verse, the very same language is used. Dvandava Ishvara Lilaya. Now normally we think, you know, what does the word lila mean? Lila means pastime. And when we think of pastimes, what do we think of? Govardhan Lila. Krishna's lifting, Govardhan Gyal. We think of Damodar Lila. Krishna being bound around the waist by Mother Jasoda's rope and knocking over the twin Arjuna trees in the courtyard of Nanda Maharaj. And Rasa Lila, Krishna dancing with the gopi, that's how we, etc. Krishna's pastimes in Vrindavan is how we associate the word lila. But Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and the Srimad Bhagavatam speak of Mahavishnu's act of creation as another one of his lilas. In the language of Brahma Samhita, it's called an auxiliary function. Auxiliary function means like secondary. There's primary and there's secondary. Something like Prabhupada gives this description of a big man. And in his office, it's secondary, because primary is his relationship with his family. But they're both functions. The people in the office know him as Mr. Big Man, whatever his name is. And in his home, it's, you know, his name, his personal name, or honey, or sweetie, or something like that, you know. There's formal, and that's secondary. And then there's his private and personal life. So, not exactly the same way, but Krishna has the lila that's his internal potency, and the lila that's through the agency of his external potency. You with me? Dvandava means duality. Dvandava mohena bharata. Raga dvesha sambhutena. Dvandava mohena. Moha means illusion. Mohena. Dvandava mohena bharata. Overcome by the dualities of desire and hate. Those are two opposites. Raga and dvesha, desire, hate. Living entities become bewildered by these dualities. And the original desire and hate is towards Krishna. not just like, I like this person, he's my friend, I don't like that person, they're my enemy. I hate them. It's towards Krishna. That's the higher realm of why we come into this world and have some attraction and some repulsion for this one and that one. Or heat and cold, or pleasure and pain, or honor and dishonor, or happiness and distress, etc. All the features of dvandva or duality. What does Krishna say? Rise above this duality, become transcendental to all of them. Very early in the second chapter of Bhagavad Gita, Krishna says, my dear Arjuna, the Vedas deal mainly with the three modes of material nature. And then, just like that, oh my dear Arjuna, rise above all of them. Be transcendental to that portion of the Vedas which deals with trying to become an enjoyer through karmakanda rituals of get the good stuff and avoid the bad stuff. Develop your piety so you can attain the heavenly realm. Isn't that news? To just think of the people in Guyana that consider themselves Hindus. They're not interested in rising above the dualities of material existence. They want happiness and they want to counteract the distress, like everybody else. They're just doing it in a religious way, which is nice, do it in a religious way, but there's still bondage within the upper planets and enjoy for some time, and then as we find in the 8th chapter of Bhagavad Gita, again descend into the intermediate planetary system. It's like child's play, like riding in a Ferris wheel. And so forth. Repeat. Repeated birth and death in the cycle of material existence where duality is reality. But it's not reality. Just like the reflection. There's no substance in the reflection. Whether it's up here or down there. It's illusion. So how do you get on the other side of illusion? Because, my goodness, that's reality. I want up there. Whatever you say, Maharaj, I want up there. I want the happiness, I want the honor, I want the enjoyment, I want the good stuff, and I want to minimize the bad stuff. You know, what can I say? That's just where I'm at, kind of language. The message of Bhagavad Gita is for those who can go beyond the conception of duality. Right in the beginning, Krishna says it. Dvandva mohena bharata. Right above this. Traigunya vishaya veda. Nishtraigunya bhavarjuna. Right above it. This is a transcendental message. Right above it. O devotees of Krishna, rise above it. How do I rise above it? Take shelter of devotional service to Krishna. Here's a gift from Krishna. It's love. It's an invitation for love, a loving relationship with Him. And situate yourself in that loving relationship with Him through the medium of service, and you can rise above duality. A nice example of Krishna's teaching that in Bhagavad Gita is the lotus flower. Here in Guyana you have lots of lotus flowers, so you're very familiar. There's water lilies that float on the water, and there's lotus flowers that rise above the surface of the water. So that's just picture, as Krishna's describing in Bhagavad Gita. There's a storm. And in the storm, the surface of the water is disturbed. And there's waves and all kinds of things going on. And the lotus flower is above the surface of the water. It may sway a bit because the stem is within the water, but it remains free from the disturbances of the water. Similarly, one who is fixed, not just theoretical, but fixed in transcendental knowledge, fixed in the shelter of Krishna's service, fixed in attachment to Krishna. It takes cultivation to get fixed. But one who is fixed, there's disturbance going on around and you're not disturbed by it. That's what's being described here. The example, the personality, is King Chitraketu. We're not there, but we can see, this is how we learn. By example, here is this king. And he had, like, you know, big time material desire. I mean, he was a nice, pious king, and he was a devotee. But he had this big time material desire. You know the story. He wanted a child, he wanted a son, and it wasn't meant to be, and he made all arrangements, and got a son, the son died, and was killed, actually, by his co-wife, and he was sad. Happy, and then sad. Angira Muni gave a name to the son. Before even the son was conceived, he was a name giving. His name was Harsha Shoka. Harsha means happiness, and Shoka means sadness. Harsha Shoka was his name. Happiness Distress. You'll have a son, and his name will be Happiness Distress. And King Chitraketu thought, well, maybe he'll be a little rebellious, maybe he won't be so submissive, and he'll talk back, and maybe he'll do some bad things, but better to have a son like that than no son at all. So, yes, let's go on with the ceremony. So he had a son, and his son died. Happy, sad. And everything of this world is has such feature, happy and sad. Can you think of something, even one thing, that doesn't have some unwanted part to that something in this world? It's built into the system. In charge is Durga. And Durga gives these two things. Of course, this is a nice, important thing to remember, because it's a pathway to transcendence. The consciousness of an individual will think, this is happiness, where another individual will think, this is distress. Here's an example. When Prabhupada returned to India, he had his heart attack in New York, and he was taken to the New Jersey shore, and the doctors advised all kinds of nasty kinds of medical things, and Prabhupada refused, and he regained his health in a natural way, and he desired to go back to India where the climate was more suitable for him. The devotees that went back with him described as they went off the plane, walking down the steps of the plane, waves of heat were coming, and they felt melted in the waves of heat. But Prabhupada was, because that's the climate he was used to. Waves of heat. And the devotees were perspiring. Oh boy. As the saying goes, one man's food is another man's poison. You've heard that one. So this is happiness for one, and this is distress for another. I can give some other examples, but you get the idea. So the consciousness of an individual is going to be a big factor in whether the same object is happiness or distress. So duality is subjective. Means one person, it's nice. Another person, it's not nice. I give so many examples. But it's The seat of consciousness, that's the soul. How we, it's the modes of nature. How we regard things determines whether we perceive it as happiness or distress. There's a whole chapter in the 11th canto, the Uddhava Gita portion of Srimad Bhagavatam, where Krishna is teaching Uddhava. Uddhava asks a question, beginning of the chapter. What's the cause of unhappiness? Simple question. Krishna gives a whole chapter to give the answer. It's the Avanti Brahman story, which I'm not going to tell at this time. But the conclusion of the Avanti Brahman story is, it's the mind. How your mind is oriented determines whether you perceive happiness or distress. Supposing that fine day comes when our mind becomes pure. When a wind, or that baby mind, when the mind becomes pure. When the mind becomes pure, what is the standard of purity is described here. It's the Chitraketu standard, or the Narayana Para standard. What's that? The mind is attached to Krishna. Attached. Like, you can't even separate. If you try, you can't separate. Like the gopis. Let's stop thinking of Krishna. It's causing us too much misery. But they can't, because they're attached to Krishna. They say bad things about Krishna. And on, bad things about Krishna, and Krishna, 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 Krishna. And then they realize we can't. We're attached to Krishna. We can't not think of Krishna. Or in the positive sense, from nectar of devotion, here's a quiz question. Of all the different injunctions, things to do, and prohibitions, things not to do, describe the nectar devotion. One, they're all in pursuance of one principle. What's that one principle? Always remember Krishna. And the prohibition, never forget Krishna. Smartavya satatam vishnur. Always, satatam, always. Smarana nityashaha. Always remember Krishna, never forget Krishna. So when the mind has come to that position, pure, only Krishna, there's no non-Krishna, there's no duality. I mean, it's hot. But if the mind is absorbed in Krishna, it's okay. Krishna wants it to be hot. It's okay if Krishna wants it to be cold. It's okay if Krishna wants it to be wet or dry or honor or dishonor. Whatever Krishna wants. Why? Because I'm attached to Krishna. In any circumstance, it's say yes to Krishna. Out of attachment to Krishna, love for Krishna. One who has attained that stage, there's no more duality. There's no more influence, let's say, of duality. Duality still is there. The material world is still doing its thing. Durga is in charge of the place. We're not the only people inhabiting the place. There's lots of other living entities inhabiting the place that she's in charge of. And there's duality. The transcendentalists, having accepted the instruction of Krishna and taken it into their heart, is now fixed in attachment to Krishna, at least progressively, fixed in attachment to Krishna. And so duality is indifferent. Initially down here, it's just you tolerate it. What can you do? It's going to be hot or it's going to be cold, etc. The flight to visit you all in Guyana, just a little sharing. I had arrived in New York on Friday from an international flight, Calcutta to Delhi, Delhi to Jordan, Jordan to New York, and you know, I was upside down. My body clock was night was day, day was night, and jet lag. It was like, and then Tuesday I'm on a plane to Guyana, but I'm still upside down. And lo and behold, there's more detail, but the person in the whole plane, there was once not just a crying child, a screamer. And it was the kind of screamer that even when the mother gave the child the bottle, like normally that's like, okay, pacifier. The child becomes quiet. The child would take some milk and then start screaming again and take some more milk and scream again. And like, it was, yikes. So I asked the stewardess, I'm jet lagged out like anything. Can you give me another seat besides in this whole plane right on the aisle opposite me as a screamer? I said, what can I do? The flight is full. And here I am. And I was, so while in the plane, I was thinking, I was just smiling. Thinking, what a sense of humor Krishna has. I'm his devotee. He knows my circumstance of, you know, what I'm going through, and he puts me next to the screamer. What a sense of humor. So, what's my assignment? Not just tolerate the screaming, but absorb my mind in Krishna. What a wonderful opportunity to tune out, you know, the duality and tune into Krishna. It was a struggle because, you know, nobody likes screaming child, but sannyasis especially. My realization is that sound vibration was created especially for sannyasis. You get the picture without the detail. No thanks. No thank you. Yes. Anyway. But so we each get our little opportunities, or many abundant opportunities, to be challenged by duality and take shelter of Krishna. I can describe many devotees who are challenged by duality and how they can see it or not see it as an opportunity to take deeper shelter of Krishna. And when here's Prabhupada's explanation. When you look at the sun, you just see light. You see no shadow. But if you turn your back to the sun, what do you see? No light and only shadow. Very simple. So if the attention goes to Krishna, duality is over there. That's Durga or Chayadevi. It's on the back side. It's not where your attention is. But if you turn your attention away from Krishna, all you see is duality. Whether it pleases me or displeases me, whether it makes me happy or doesn't make me happy, etc. And then we're on the roller coaster. And this goes on indefinitely. We've been doing this for how long? Can you count the number of lifetimes that we've been on it's unlimited. How many species of life have we experienced? Prabhupada said, consider that you've experienced all the species of life before coming to this human form of life. That's a lot of species of life. How many times? And how many more times do we want to do it? We have a choice to make. It is a free will choice. We can continue, or we can withdraw consciousness as Krishna instructs us to do, and invest it in Sat. Sat means eternal, or that which exists. Na sate vijite bhavo, na bhavo vijite sataha. Very, very simple and direct. Ubayor abhidrishnon tasvaniyo tasvadarshi bihi. The tasvadarshi, that's what they do. So we have a choice. We can be a tasvadarshi, or we can be a just like keep doing it. And being pious, as opposed to being impious, is still part of the program. So it's a matter of making a choice. Literally, The mercy is abundantly being provided to us, like I was describing yesterday. The mercy that Prabhupada came to give through his establishing of ISKCON. He came to give the real deal, the alternative to duality. You know, not just the reflection of the object, but the object. Please take it. The spiritual world, the door is open. Just walk through the door. Don't stay attached to duality. Don't stay attached to duality. Move to transcendence. At least a little bit. And then a little bit more. Then a little bit more. Krishna will give you the strength. Krishna will support you and help you in his internal potency. Radha will give you devotional service as opposed to a mix of devotional service and fruitive activity and devotional service and fruitive activity and devotional service and fruitive activity. Go from the mixed to the unmixed. Unalloyed devotion. Work towards that. Cultivate that. And the primary means of doing that is our hearing and chanting, what we're doing right now, and what we did earlier today, this morning, our japa, mangalarti, calling Krishna's name, taking shelter of Krishna's name, pleading with the internal potency, please give me shelter of Krishna's service. And then when the Krishna service opportunity comes, say yes. And the daily duties that you do, let it all become devotional service by that awakening of dormant Krishna consciousness through the medium of the sadhana that we're practicing. And one day, you know what the goal is, the Chitraketu goal, that one, where duality is gone. When it's indifferent to it. Whatever Krishna wants. That's a very advanced stage. Let us cultivate the devotional spirit to come to that qualified stage. We know what it looks like. Let us strive for that from our present position of increasing our desire to serve Krishna and decreasing our affinity for being an enjoyer of matter through fruitive activity. Do the things that we do for Krishna. Don't do the things that we do because it's going to enhance my position as an enjoyer of material nature. Let go of that propensity and take shelter of the serving Krishna propensity. Cultivate that. That's bhakti. Any discussion? Questions? Yeah, go ahead.
If I try to convince people who are seeing duality as reality, if I'm trying to convince them that is not true, but the same as I myself in my life, I am attached to illusory things, then am I going to be effective, or what is the secret? How do I suppose, you know, how do I deal with it?
Two things. Don't be pretentious, as if you are beyond duality when you're not beyond duality, you're not you, but any of us. We should not be pretentious, projecting ourselves in a, you know, in a misleading way. But rather, as best as we can, internally and externally, cultivate the message in our lives. And then the second part is, we speak that message that we've heard from one who is beyond duality. Here's Prabhupada saying, I may be an imperfect person, but if I speak the words of a perfect person, my speaking is perfect. Now there's greater potency if the speaking matches the heart or consciousness. But what the circumstance that you described is our circumstance where the message is not where we're at. We're mixed. And the message is a message of unmixed. We speak the message of the unmixed perfect person. And now going back to the first, we're not pretending or projecting as if we're something other than, you know, in the process of cleansing ourselves. We don't claim to be something we're not. But we claim that the words of the perfect person is perfect. I just this morning received a letter from someone who was teaching Bhakti Shastri. Because I had forwarded to the teacher a message from one of their students that said, "Wow, I'm getting so much from these classes." So to encourage the teacher, I forwarded the wow letter. And the teacher said to me, "I'm simply repeating the message that I've heard from from the books and from our acharya's commentaries and from teachers who I especially regard, and I just repeat their message. I'm not a perfect person. I'm speaking the words of those who are perfect acharya and those who are mediums of or conveyors of the message of our acharyas. But it's having an enormous impact on the people who receive it. If there's fidelity to repeat, not imagine, whether it's realized or not realized, repeat the message as purely as one can, with one's heart as pure and the message intact as much as one can. No spins, no adding, subtracting, no editing, just repeat the message purely, as purely as one can. It's powerful. Even if we're not on the Paramahamsa platform or the Narayana Para platform, it's powerful. It's powerful for us, exactly as Bhaktisiddhanta said to Prabhupada, good for you and good for them. You have the experience, as do I and anyone else who has taught. When you teach, how much you learn from teaching. You certainly learn as the student. Having received and received and received as a student, one then tries to teach, you learn so much more. And there's a happiness in addition to what you learn. And what is that happiness? It's the happiness of Krishna, who says in Bhagavad Gita, such a person is very dear to me. That person may not be perfect, but they're trying to serve according to the instruction Krishna gives. It's powerful, and there's happiness. Is it more powerful if one was beyond duality? Yes. So what to do? We take our present circumstance in honesty, not in pretense, but self-honesty, and speak the message as we've heard it. That's our job description. That's our service assignment. And it's effective. Less effective than if we were pure, but it's still effective on us, beneficial for us, and beneficial for others. So we try to do like that. That's what we do in our Krishna movement. So my assignment is become pure, strive for purity, and present the message in a transparent manner as best I can. Krishna, please help me. In the mood of service. Say it slower and clearer. One question.
A couple of
questions.
One question
first, okay? There's different names. It's one personality, just like you're one personality. And there are different people may address you by different names. According to the relationship they have with you, they address you by a different name. You're not multiple people. You have relationships with persons, and according to their perception of you, they address you by a name. Similarly, Mahamaya, Durga, Parvati, Kali, etc., etc., etc. Many names, one personality. Different features of the same personality.
She
in the original state she is? sees an expansion of the internal potency. Sees an expansion of the internal potency. The internal, we'll say it the other way around, the internal potency expands. There she is. Her existence is not independent of the internal potency. She is not the internal potency, she is an expansion of the internal potency. The reflection of an object is not the object, but it has no existence other than the object, which it is a reflection of. To repeat the question, is Yoga Maya and Mahamaya the same as or different from Radharani? You ask the question, so I have to, it's a little detail. There's the internal potency, and there's the external potency. According to Prabhupada's teachings, which is according to scripture, it's actually one potency. Within the internal potency is the capacity to expand as the external potency. Within the internal potency is the capacity to expand as the external potency. Within the object is the potential of a reflection of the object. Within the internal potency, there are three divisions. Satchitananda, eternality, knowledge, and bliss. Radharani is the bliss portion of the internal potency. And Mahamaya is the reflection or the expansion of the internal potency. A little elaboration on that. In Bhagavad Gita, Krishna says, Naham prakasha sarvasya yoga maya samavrata muto yam nabi janati. You familiar with the verse? A little bit. Krishna speaks in the Bhagavad Gita of his yogamaya potency. When we think of yogamaya potency, Hare Krishna devotees, we think of that potency by which Krishna engages in his pastimes in the spiritual world. The yogamaya potency facilitates Krishna's pastimes in the spiritual world. By his yogamaya potency, he lifts Govardhan Hill. By his yogamaya potency, he does what he does. By his internal potency, yogamaya potency. But the verse in Bhagavad Gita that Krishna uses the term yogamaya, he's speaking of the mudhas who can't, naham prakasha sarvasya, who cannot see him. They can't understand him properly because of his yogamaya potency. That's the expansion of his yogamaya potency, the mahamaya potency. But he refers to the Mahamaya potency as Yogamaya. Prakash. You've heard that as a man's name. Prakash means manifest. Na aham prakash. I am not manifest. Unto the mudhas by the agency of my Yogamaya potency. They can't see me. They can't understand me. Mahamaya covers them. The expansion of his yogamaya potency covers them. There is a relation, an inseparable relation between the object and the reflection of the object. Within the object is the capacity to have its reflection or her reflection. So it's actually one energy. But in a higher sense, but in a another sense, there's two potencies. They act differently. But they're both under one Krishna. As Krishna directs Mahamaya, Krishna also directs his internal potency. He directs both. He's the potent, and there's his potency. He's Shaktiman, and there's Shakti. Shakti acts according to the will of Shaktiman, the possessor of the potency. And not otherwise. Okay. Anything on the ladies' side? Questions? Comments? Yeah. That's why I called on you first, because I knew that you would have another point.
But you were speaking about acting on this energy, reconditioned souls with material bodies when we are manipulated by the external energy. Now, what difference is those who are not dealing with the great soul? They're fully under the protection. So,
of divine protection.
Of divine energy. So, if I, conditioned soul with conditional tendencies, adopt the practices of devotional service, I engage myself hearing and chanting and
etc. Right.
Then, what is the function of the three modes? Where I am doing all of that? Am I now under divine energy? Have I escaped the impulses of the three modes?
Two answers. Proportionate to, and that means, so if as Prabhupada said, if you're 50% surrender to Krishna, then you're 50% relieved. 80%, 90%, 99%, 99% relieved. So proportionate to. And then the second is, one can vacillate. One can be very enthusiastic in devotional service and be well connected with Krishna, and then slapping in one's submission to Krishna. And when one slapping in submission to Krishna, the modes of nature by which one was conditioned previously again take hold and rule. Intermittently, one can be, so that's anishtita bhakti, unsteady devotion. So it's two things. Proportionate to the degree of submission, and intermittently from time to time. So the time energy is still acting on a conditioned soul. So as a conditioned soul, I can very enthusiastically chant or serve or hear or worship, and then passage of time, and then less intensely absorbed than immediately, not after some time, immediately the modes of nature again acting. So it's those two factors. The intensity of direction of my consciousness towards Krishna, or sankalpa, the intention with which I'm conducting my life, where my attention goes, and then it's, you know, until one becomes fixed, it's intermittent. From time to time, it can be this, and then it can be that. It can be this, and it's vacillating. So the goal is to become steady, and the unsteadiness is due to impurity or anarthas in the heart. So we want to cleanse those anarthas in the heart by strong hearing and chanting, faithful hearing and chanting. Gradually that cleansing takes place and steadiness can come. Okay, thank you very much. Srila Prabhupada ki jai.